Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. It's Glastonbury weekend. Have you been following that?
I've had little choice but to follow bits of it, yeah.
What do you mean little choice? Is someone tying you up and forcing you to watch it as some sort of torture?
No, not gun to the head stuff. Basically, my van that I drive around in can only really get BBC Radio 2.
Oh, okay.
Everything else is very unreliable, so I listen to that, and they've been doing quite relentless coverage of the thing. So I'm kind of forced to listen to that or just drive around in stony silence. So I've chosen Glastonbury.
I think listening to Glastonbury's all right. I don't like watching Glastonbury. I've decided this. I don't like really watching live pop music.
Is there a reason, though? Because I have my reasons why I'm not enjoying it.
I don't know. I've watched a couple of little bits and a few reasons. You see, I can watch, I can go to a thing where there's like an orchestra, right? Because I think it's the attitude of people on stage I don't like. And I'm not saying all music artists are like this, but I just can't watch them prancing about, lots of attitude, swearing. And what I want to see is an artist come on, not really move about much, not talk to the audience. I think Rod Stewart said he hasn't done his thing yet. I think that's tonight as we record. He said he wants to pack so much in, he's not going to talk to the audience. I think, good. I just want you to play your music. But then a lot of live music, I don't know whether it's my ears. I turned it on yesterday and Alanis Morissette was on. I love Alanis Morissette.
God, I'm so glad you mentioned that because she is top of my list of notes.
Well, that's really interesting because I love Alanis Morissette. That first album, Jagged Little Pill, brilliant. I love the song Ironic, and that's what I listened to. After about 5 seconds of it, I turned it off for two reasons. One, she started singing. I thought, to my ears, that's not in tune, right? And I'm not a musical person, but I find this a lot. I listen to people singing live, and you realise just how, I suspect it's because they can't really hear themselves with everything going on. But then she started getting the audience to sing the song. And I sort of think, they've paid to see you and hear you. I don't know why artists do that as well. She started off, literally, the first line of the song, she held the microphone out to the crowd. And I think, you fucking sing it, love.
It's like paying for a singer when all you hear is the crowd.
Yes.
And isn't it ironic? Yes.
It's like, by the way, that's what I'm paid for.
You glossed over a little bit out of tune. She sounded like a bag of cats dying slowly.
And then I turned, I can't remember who else I turned on, and they sounded dreadful to me. And I just thought, what am I? I don't want to watch it. I don't, you know, I guess if you're there, it's the whole atmosphere of the thing. But it always sounds dreadful to me. Whenever, every year I watch a little bit of Glastonbury, and very rarely do I hear anyone and think, yeah, no, you can actually do this singing lark without being in a studio. I'm not saying they can't sing. I'm just saying that in that atmosphere, to me, it always sounds fucking dreadful.
I'm sure Alanis Morissette, when she's in a studio and she can hear herself and everything's properly set up, I'm sure she sounds great.
Yes.
Glastonbury did her no favours at all. Also, when the crowd were attempting to sing, they were so out of time.
Yes.
And it wasn't just Alanis. We shouldn't just put it all
there. No.
Many other artists were there letting the crowd do all the work for them. It was insufferable. If I want it, I mean, it's like hearing a rowdy pub.
Yes.
It's just, I don't know why it's televised. And to make matters worse, as I said, I was listening to it on the radio. Zoe Ball, bless her heart, had completely lost her voice.
Right.
And she was persisting with it. Anyone with a brain in their head would have thought, get her off the airwaves. No one can hear her. She's struggling. But because it's Zoe Ball and she's a bit of a name, they just let her carry on. Oh, it was awful.
I just don't think it works well on the telly or on radio. I think it's a good thing if you go, I suspect. I've only ever been to one music festival. That was years ago. I went to the V Festival in the Midlands. And I went for just the day, so I didn't have all the camping malarkey, all that stuff. I just went for the day. And it was good fun, right? I enjoyed it. But I don't think it works on telly. And they you know, saturate the TV with it. And it's a massive thing. Like, they do make a big thing of it. And I get that it's a massive festival, but I just think that's, like, don't put it on the main stations. There's enough, like, stream it if people want to watch it. Although I do quite enjoy all the swearing that happens at times of day when it shouldn't happen. And then all the complaints that come in. It's like, they do warn about it. And then there's always this thing, well, why can't the BBC cut it? Well, because it's live.
Yeah, you know, that's quite obvious.
You can't do it. I mean, you could argue, should they have it on delay and cut it? But then that would just be dreadful broadcasting. You just cut in the middle of a song or whatever. So
I have a similar beef kind of in reverse, because you know I'm into my boxing.
Oh, yeah.
And I lose my mind when, you know, you've paid about 20, sometimes 25 quid to watch a pay-per-view boxing fight. Yeah. It's on, you know, the main event's on at 10, 11, maybe even later than that. If it's a Vegas thing, it could be 4 in the bloody morning. You know, I'm a big boy. I've paid my money. I'm watching blokes beat the hell out of each other. And then we cut to the corner for the in-between round sort of motivational speech and, you know, advice on what to do next. You know, don't get hit. Things like that. Great advice like that.
Yeah, brilliant.
And you'll hear the corner getting a bit excited, going, oh, fuck him up. Come on. He's on the fucking rake. You're going to fucking hit him. And then they'll cut back to the main commentary team and we'll go, and apologies there if you heard some colourful language from the court. And don't apologise. I'm a big boy. I've paid for this. I've sat up. I've waited. I don't need your little apologies because I heard a bad word. But then hearing the BBC at 2 o'clock in the afternoon,
yeah.
That's just brilliant. It was, more swearing there would be great.
I know. I mean, it's weird, isn't it, the whole swearing thing? Because I was watching the under-21 European Championships final last night, which was England against Germany, and England won it 3-2, which was brilliant, right? And they interviewed one of the players, and the interview kind of cut in very abruptly. They said, we're now go pitch side to speak to Jonathan Rowe, I think his name was, and it was just very abrupt. And they went back to the studio, and the presenter said, I'm sorry, it was a very abrupt intro, but he used some colourful language at the start of that interview, which we couldn't use. And this was sort of, it'd gone to extra time, so we're now sort of 10:30 at night. And I know that it's football and kids might be allowed to stay up, but I just think it's 10:30 at night. Why are we not having swearing on certain things?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a weird thing, that idea of... That always happens in football. I mean, why they still go down to the pitch side and speak to players just after they've won something? Because invariably they swear, right? Yeah. They always go, oh, fucking hell, I can't believe it. And then they go, oh, sorry, you know. It's like, well, stop. You know, pre-recorded interview. At least you could say Channel 4 didn't do a live thing and they were able to cut the swearing out. But I also think it's late enough to sort of have the swearing. When you watch football in the middle of the afternoon during the football season and you have the crowd audibly shouting the referee's a wanker, they never apologise for that. But then they might have one person shout out, you fucker, or something like that, that's picked up by the microphone. Apologies if the microphone's picked up any. You've had 50,000 people shouting wanker. You've not apologised for that, have you? It's bizarre.
It is really strange. And also, I think there's some spectacularly cruel decisions that go on in the world of sport and interviewing. And then they're surprised when bad language comes out, especially when it comes around to things like the Olympics. And you get someone who's interviewing someone who's just come fourth. You know, they've not got a gold, silver or bronze. They've just snuck into fourth. They're exhausted. They've just run sort of 800 metres or whatever. They're trying to catch their breath. They're coming to the realisation they've fucked up. They've not got anything to show for the last 4 years of training of their life.
Yeah.
And some bastard with a microphone from the BBC rocks up to them and goes, well, fourth place.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Yeah. It's like, you're asking for trouble. They're in floods of tears. They're coming to the realization, as I say, they've fucked it all up. And it just seems remarkably cruel to shove a microphone under someone's nose right at that second and then not expect them to just fall apart.
I also think it's weird, like with athletics, you're right, like with football, the interview happens, you know, a few minutes after the match and they've had a chance just to stop. But you often at the Olympics, you have someone who's desperately still out of breath. You know, why don't you just give them a little bit more time to recover? Because you just, I mean, you know, if you shut your eyes, it's just heavy breathing for 3 minutes. It's just not. And the questioning, I think we've talked about this before, the questioning now is dreadful. I do feel that the quality of reporter and interviewer has dropped massively over the years. You tend to have stupid questions. They always say, you are Olympic champion. How does that feel? What a stupid fucking question. What they're going to go, well, it feels really shit, to be honest. I mean, they're going to go, well, fuck it. That's inviting them to swear because they go, well, it's fucking amazing or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they just ask the most inane questions. And what I hate now, more than anything, this particularly in the darts, and I've noticed it creeping into other sports where there is, you're in an enclosed space. I think even in the snooker a little bit, they'll do the post-match or post-event interview, but then the person doing the interview almost has to do the thing to the crowd where they have to screech the name of the person because they've done the interview in front of the crowd. And they go, ladies and gentlemen, your winner tonight is Phil Taylor! You think, shut the fuck up! I don't want to hear you screaming down my television. Thank you very much. So what happened to the very laid-back interviewer drives me insane.
I know.
Insane.
They've got to sell it, haven't they, and hype it. But yeah, I do understand. It is intensely annoying. The other thing they do...
By the way, can I just point out how dated I am using Phil Taylor as an example? Why Phil Taylor was the only name that came to my mind then when I could have said Luke Littler, Luke Humphrey. I could have used it, but no, I went for Phil Taylor, who's been retired for several years.
The other one is, and you don't see this very much anymore, because I think they've even realised it's a little bit... indelicate, but when they say, I see a runner up there, what happened? What went wrong?
Yes.
Well, yes. I missed the pot, didn't I? The red ball didn't go where it was fucking supposed to.
Yeah. And the other thing that really annoys me is they seem to want to keep them for as long as possible. I just think, ask two questions and let them go. They don't want to be talking to you, really. They have to. Like, most sports have this sort of, it's part of their contract. They have to do the interviews afterwards. But it's like, don't keep them. Like, don't ask another stupid question because you feel you've got them, you're going to keep them. You know, it's just stupid. And I know it's probably not their fault. They're told to do it, you know, the producers or whatever. But I just find it. It's just poor.
As politely as the interviewer might manage to dress the question up, the question in a nutshell is, well, you fucked that up. How do you feel?
Yeah. But going back to Glastonbury, I mean, it's a sort of thing they do at Glastonbury, though. They'll speak to an artist after their set, won't they? You have Joe Wiley or whatever saying, you know, so how did that feel? Well, you know, I've just performed in front of a lot of people. It was fine. It was great. What do you want them to say?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to name the artist because I don't feel it's very nice. And I'll say they're a very talented artist. And I heard their performance and their performance was fantastic. And I thought it was great. Then I heard them being interviewed.
Yeah.
And I thought, singing, fantastic. Talking, not your strong point.
No, I mean, I have to edit and listen to a lot of music interviews. Now, I have had this conversation with a lot of people, right? This is just, it's my work. I do it. It's fine. But I mean, I find there's nothing more dull than listening to a musician talking about their music. Now, they might say to me, well, there's nothing more dull than listening to a footballer talking about football. And that's just, it's because it's an interest, right? So if you're into music, but I can't, I mean, you get two categories of music artists, I find. And bear in mind, I have to listen to a lot of music interviews and edit a lot of music interviews. You get those who have just, there's no, they don't want to be there, really. They don't want to be interviewed. I mean, I've listened to a few where they just, one word answers, and the poor presenter. I mean, I listened to one a while, I forget who it was, but Joe Wiley was doing the interview, and you could tell she was struggling. Do you know what I mean? Because she thought, I've got this guy in the studio. Like, it was an hour special with whoever it was, and he just wasn't interested. He didn't want to be there.
Wow.
And you could just sort of see her trying to build up to a question, almost feeding him an answer, so that he would go, oh, yes, well, you know, obviously when I wrote this song. And he'd go, yeah, no, I wrote that, you know, last year. And she'd go,
wow, okay.
Right, you know, when you wrote that song, you know, what was going through your mind? Well, you know, it was just, you know, it was the pandemic.
You do wonder if they know what they're doing and they're deliberately trying to tank the interview just to make
possible.
It awkward.
It's possible. But on the other hand, you get the sort of pretentious, you know, I mean, some of them, again, I get it. They're artists, right? And it's a creative world, and they're you know, perhaps a little bit, you know, airy fairy or whatever. But you know, you get them going, you know, when I wrote this song, you know, I was looking out over an ocean and I sort of felt the sea calling to me, almost the sea making the notes, and the clouds were almost giving me the lyrics. Oh, what are you talking about?
See, I can't deal with that. I think if someone told me the sea had been calling to me, I'd tell them next time it does walk into it, then fucking hell.
So I do find that, you know, listening to musicians talk is not always the greatest experience. So occasionally you get someone who's really good, really interesting, but it's few and far between, I have to say.
It is. I do remember, though, sometimes, and I think you'll probably know better than I do. I think it was Euro 96. Some of the footballers who in the England team who aren't really known for, and no disrespect, there are exceptions to the rule, but aren't really known for their wit or intellect, shall we say. They're very good at kicking a ball about, but when it comes to profound, interesting thought, not so much. But some of them got a fun game going where they were trying to sneak song titles into their interviews.
Yes.
Which I think showed a level of fun that a lot of these other entertainers don't really possess, because they were thinking, well, we know we say the usual thing like game of two halves and we'll stick it to them, and we got up and pressed hard in the second half and, you know, all that usual bollocks.
Yes.
But they managed to sneak in some fun. And even, I think, Alan Shearer, when he was questioned on it, when the interviewers started to pick up, are they sneaking in song titles? I think Alan Shearer said, it's just your imagination. Which I appreciated. So that shows a certain level of intellect to the footballers. But yeah, the artists, I think they get a bit too swept away in their own self-importance sometimes.
Yeah. But I think I disagree with you in the fact that I think footballers do have good wit. A lot of footballers are quite funny people. And I do find now that footballers, it's probably because they're given more media training, perhaps, but they're actually very good at talking. I can listen to most of the England team now. You know, you sort of think they're quite erudite young men. I quite like listening to them.
It's because I haven't really paid much attention to football in a while, but I imagine Gazza in his heyday, his idea of wit would have been to kick you in the bollocks, shout banter and run away.
I was listening to a bit of a podcast the other day, and it was Stuart Pearce talking about being at the World Cup in Italia 90. And he said, a lot of us had never been to a major tournament before. We were all young players. So we didn't really know how to behave and all that sort of thing. And he said, Bobby Robson, who was the England manager at the time, had sort of said to them, just behave. That's all, you know, just be good. And he said, on the first day, they were out in the hotel, but around the pool. And he looked up on the diving board and he said, there was this figure completely covered in toilet paper, looking like a mummy. Right. And he said, we knew immediately it was Gazza. We just knew immediately it was Gazza. And he jumped into the pool. And of course, all the toilet paper just rose to the top of the pool. And then Gazza got out of the pool completely butt naked in front of all the guests at the hotel. It wasn't like closed for just the England teams. There was all the other guests in front. And he just ran through the crowd and all the other guests back through the hotel lobby. And Stuart Pearce sort of thought, oh, you know, we're all going to get a bollocking now. And at dinner in the evening, Bobby Robson just came in when all the players were sat down. And rather than sort of point out Gazza and sort of say, you fucking idiot, don't do that, he just said, I think we've got an idiot among us. Now, Ben, I want to talk about AI. Now, I know that you and I have used AI frequently on the podcast recently, but how often do you use AI for anything else other than a bit of fun on the podcast?
I use it pretty much, I'd say, on a daily basis now. I'm asking it for its opinion on things, advice, identifying things. Yeah, I use it quite a lot.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I use it for any other purpose yet, apart from just for a little bit of fun on the podcast. I mean, when I Google stuff, because I'm still of the, but maybe it's a generational thing, because I still Google things, but I do notice the first thing that comes up now is some AI response when you Google something. So I haven't got to the point where I am asking AI for answers to things. And yeah, it's probably going to be the way forward, but I'm still feel quite wary of AI because I don't, it's not like I'm sort of a conspiracy theorist, but I think we have to distrust it a little bit. Apparently 3 in 5 people are still very wary of AI.
You see, I was initially a little nervy about it, but I've decided to completely embrace it because I think otherwise, at the rapid pace it's going on, I think if you don't embrace it and try and keep up with it now, you'll be left in the dust and you might never come back.
I think it's going to be very good for a lot of things. I'm not against AI. I think it's going to be brilliant. I just sort of am wary of how some governments, how some people, companies might use it. So I'm still a little bit wary of that. Also, I'm wary of the truth of the stuff. I mean, it's interesting. Like, I talk to like my parents and they'll say, oh, you know, I don't know what I'm looking at now online. I don't know if it's an AI generated thing or not. And I think that's true as well. Like, you go through stuff. I was watching a video the other day and it was like a Vox Pops thing in the street and it was quite funny. And then it sort of popped up, said this was all completely AI generated. Mm. That stuff, at least they're telling you. But if they didn't tell you it was AI generated, you think, I can't remember what they were saying, but you know, some of it was very moronic. You know, oh, that's unbelievable. And also I was reading that AI, one of the latest incarnations of AI, it's hallucinating.
Oh dear.
And it provides incorrect and inaccurate information. I think, well, I mean, I can't remember what it was. A few weeks ago, I think you got AI to give me some sort of personality test.
Yes.
And I can't quite remember what AI said about me, but now I'm thinking, was it hallucinating?
Oh, well, this is the downside to it, is we, every time you see anything, any piece of news now from now until the end of time, we're going to have to fact check everything in a way we never did.
I know. But when you fact check it, how do you know that's not an AI generated response? I mean, it's going to be very difficult. Very difficult.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It could be. Yeah, it could be. I mean, there really is no way out of that.
Also, I sort of feel going forward, you know, when we're all out of work because AI is doing everything, what, how are we all going to survive?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are some jobs that AI can't really take over. But I feel bad for people who've maybe gone to university and spent years and years doing something that AI has just completely rendered redundant now.
Mm.
Like,
I know.
You've dedicated years and years of your life learning all sorts of intricate information, and a computer can do it in a heartbeat now. You're surplus to requirements. It's tough.
I was reading that one of the among the first jobs that could go with AI would be accountants, because AI can do all that pretty quickly. You know, it's very sort of black and white, really. The same with some law stuff.
Yeah.
I think more civil law and, you know, stuff to do with houses and all that sort of stuff. They're saying that that all could be done with AI because it's very black and white. There doesn't need to be any sort of, it's not like an evidence-based judgment that needs to be made. It's just, this is the facts. So this is what needs to be done. And AI can do all that. See, I mean, how many people are going to be out of a job doing that? Even in my line of work, radio, a lot of production stuff would eventually be done by AI. And you sort of think, well, what are we all going to do?
Yeah. Translator. There's a job that's gone.
Yes. And if we get to the point where there's going to be driverless cabs, driverless trucks, all those people, the cab drivers, truck drivers, I'd imagine trains would eventually become automated. You've already got the DLR in London, which has never had drivers. So it's only a matter of time before the tube and the normal trains will become completely automated, right? So it's going to be, what are we all going to do? I mean, I'm hoping that we'll all kind of live in some sort of utopia where we just live a fun life and we can spend our days having walks by the river.
Yeah, you know, that'd be nice.
Being by the sea, being given music by the clouds.
Is this your long speech for universal income? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, I think we're going to have it, aren't we? We're going to have that sort of thing. Or we just have things are just free. You just, whatever you need, you can have.
Shall we demonstrate it for anyone who thinks we're maybe exaggerating? I mean, you said radio presenter, I said translator. Yeah. Why don't we see right now on the spot if I can get ChatGPT, Giselle Petrie-Turner, as she's as we call her Giselle, maybe we should go for French. What about a French podcast producer or host?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'll give her a bash, so to speak. Giselle, please introduce in French the introduction to your new podcast. It's the Trev and Ben podcast. I want you to say in French, hello and welcome to the Trev and Ben podcast with the amazing Ben Harmer and the frankly mediocre Trevor Smith.
Bonjour et bienvenue dans le podcast de Trev and Ben avec l'incroyable Ben Harmer et le franchement mediocre Trevor Smith.
Well, I mean, we've not really pushed the limits of AI there, have we, really?
Well, we just proved that we can have a French perfectly speaking podcast host. So everything we've said is true.
I was listening to the Adam Buxton podcast the other day, and he demonstrated how AI can, I think you can upload the transcript of a book. If you've got a book, an e-book, you can upload that. It will take all that book in a very quick time. And then you can get AI to then produce a podcast with two people, two AI-generated people, talking about that book. Oh, and it can do it all in a matter of minutes.
I wonder how long it would take for us to get to master this technology where we don't actually have to sit down and record this. We can just fart out the next week's generated AI podcast.
Well, you could probably do it now if we knew how to do it properly. If you could work AI properly, you could probably do that now.
I resent that comment, if I can work AI properly. I think one of us can work it far better than the other.
Well, yes, but could we get it to do that? I don't know what you have to do. I don't use it enough to really know what you've got to do. But I mean, I look at images and videos that people make. One of the things that pops up on my feed a lot is these AI-generated, they're kind of babies, but they're using the dialogue from a famous film or...
Yes, I've seen this.
A famous thing. And it seems to be the thing, like there was one from Fawlty Towers the other day. So you've got this AI-generated baby, but it's got a moustache like Basil Fawlty, and it's using the audio, but it's lip-syncing it very well. And I mean, I wouldn't have a clue how you even start to do that. It's obviously a fairly basic function of AI because everyone seems to be doing it, but I've just not investigated it. I don't know how you do that. So to me, that seems like it could be incredibly complicated to make that happen, but I'm assuming it probably isn't.
I've seen those. I think I could put one of those together relatively quickly.
Could you do two babies of us, like take a little excerpt from the... from a podcast and make a little baby video of Trev and Ben?
Yeah, I might need a couple of images first to start with, but yeah, I think I could probably do that.
Oh, that could be interesting. Yeah. That could be the thing that puts us on the map, Ben. That could be the thing that makes us go viral. Now, here's an interesting thing where AI is being used, and I'm not sure about this. Fortune telling.
Yes.
So there was a thing this week I read about a lady who used ChatGPT to tell her fortune from her used coffee grounds, ground coffee beans, right? So this is completely AI-generated response. She asked it about her marriage, and AI claimed that the coffee beans was telling it that her husband was having an affair.
Oh, dear.
The woman, without ever asking her husband if this was true, filed for divorce and told the husband to get out of the house.
Okay.
Obviously, he was confused.
I imagine he was, bless him.
Didn't know what was going on. Thought it was some sort of prank. And then he got the divorce papers.
Oh.
And the two are now seemingly heading for a court battle. I mean, imagine using AI for that sort of thing and believing it. I mean, even if you went, I know some people do believe in this sort of stuff. I mean, personally, I think it's all nonsense. Maybe there is something in it, maybe there isn't. I sort of think probably not. But even if I went to pay to have someone read my palm, do tarot, or I'd still think it was nonsense. But certainly getting AI to do it. I've downloaded to my phone an app. Have you ever seen the film Big?
I'm aware of it. I don't think I have seen it. If I have seen it, it must have been about 30 years ago.
Basically, it's a kid who goes to this machine. I think it's the Zoltar machine. I'm hoping it is, because that's the app I've downloaded. And he sort of wishes in front of the machine that he could be a grown-up. And then, of course, he wakes up and he's Tom Hanks, which that's not a bad person to wake up as. I wish I'd wake up as Tom Hanks. Imagine the money you've suddenly got in your bank account if you wake up as Tom Hanks. God, that's brilliant.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
So anyway, I've downloaded the Zoltar Psychic Seer app, right?
Okay.
And I'm going to ask it to tell my fortune.
But I would just like to say, applying brilliant technology like AI, you can achieve some amazing things. But if you point it at pseudoscience and nonsense, then AI will still come out with nonsense.
Well, that's true. That is true. I say that's true. Let's see what Zoltar has to offer, shall we? Look, you get a lovely bit of music. So that's nice, isn't it?
Lovely.
So, I'm now going to ask...
No expense spared on this show.
I'm going to ask it to now give me a fortune reading.
Oh,
I get a nice image of Zoltar. He's got a crystal ball.
Bet the listeners are enjoying that.
Right, I've now got my fortune. You know exactly what you want. Work on it and make it materialise. Well, yeah, should we do? I'll do one more because I'm a little bit...
So it didn't even try and suggest. It just put the blame back on you. You know what you want.
Right, hang on. Here we go again. Ooh. It's exciting, isn't it?
Well, for you, maybe.
I'm sure this is basically the same as the last one. Focus on what you want to achieve and you will win. Don't forget.
Forget what? It didn't tell us anything.
Well, don't forget that. To focus on what you want to achieve, I suppose.
Don't forget to focus. Good advice.
I mean, that's those sort of things that those... I mean, I'm not saying there isn't anything in life coaching, but those people that do that kind of bullshit, do you know what I mean? It's like, focus on what you want. I always think, again, because those are, to me, that's a kind of pseudo-religion. Who's that American guy? Is it like Tim Robbins or something? And he's like massive. He has books and all sorts. And, you know, thousands of people turn up to watch him. And he stands on stage and says, you just got to believe, man. You just got to believe him. It's within you. You got to reach your potential. You know, it's just like watching a cult leader.
Yeah, there's a lot of stupid people out there.
Anyway, the reason I wanted to get onto this is, and I phoned you last night, having read all about this stuff, and I said, Ben, in the morning, before we record, can you save, because I know that you make proper tea with tea leaves, you save your tea leaves?
Yeah.
And the reason I want to do that is I want to see whether Giselle Petrie-Turner, our AI assistant on the podcast, can read your tea leaves.
Yeah, I'm a little bit troubled now. Is this going to tell me to divorce Mrs. Ben?
Well, we need to find out what the leaves are saying. And, I mean, it's up to you whether you then decide to act upon what is received. You know, it might be that you take it seriously. I mean, if it was to say that, I don't know, for any reason you should leave Mrs. Ben, I mean, it's probably more likely that it would tell her to get out away from you while she can, you know.
As quick as possible, yeah.
But let's see. So can we see if to start with, Petrie is able to read the tea leaves, and then secondly, see what she has to say on the matter.
I have sent you the picture. I don't know if before we jump into Giselle, you want to maybe give me your own thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I have no training in reading tea leaves, but I'd imagine you just make up whatever comes to mind. I mean, looking at it, it's very sparse, the tea leaves. So to start with, I would say what this is telling me about you is that you're a very frugal man, very mean and miserly. I mean, the tea leaves are minimal in this.
Well, I'll just have to object to that, because actually there shouldn't be any tea leaves in the bottom of my mug. I use a strainer to prevent leaves getting in my mug, because I don't want to swallow tea leaves. So I deliberately, for your benefit, slugged a bit of tea into my mug without the strainer before I strained the rest in, so there'd be something. So don't be such an ungrateful bastard.
I thought you could empty the tea leaves out the teapot, like empty them into a saucer. Anyway, that's fine.
No, hang on. Before you just thrush that at me and have a go at me, I felt, this is how much I was committing to this bollocks,
right, yeah.
Was I felt it would be more unique and true to the pseudoscience that the leaves fall where they fall. Uh-oh. I thought, I'll drink the mug of tea and not interrupt where the leaves settle. I could just slosh some leaves in my mug and fake it, but I actually went to the effort of committing to this nonsense.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm going to read you all. Tea leaves now. What I can see is there are, they're not all at the bottom. You have actually got some tea leaves around the edge of the cup, which tells me that you like to live on the edge of society. You are very much almost a loner to some degree.
Tell you that I've been drinking out of that side of the cup and that's where they've sloshed up.
No. I'm reading the tea leaves on a philosophical level here, not just to, you know, not to say where you've obviously drunk out of that side of the cup. I'm seeing how they, I mean, interestingly enough, it would seem from the photo you have drunk from the left-hand side of the cup. I mean, that's an interesting thing to look at to start with. I mean, are you more left-brained than right-brained? I don't know what that means. But, you know,
good.
People say, are you left-handed or right-handed?
You should know that. We've known each other many years.
I think you're right-handed, aren't you?
I am right-handed, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I think that you're a bit of a loner. You like to gravitate around the edge of society a little bit. The bottom of the cup, you've got sort of a cluster to the right-hand side. And they look quite smiley. So I would say this tells me that you've got a sort of happy life. You've got happiness to come. You've probably got some sort of great thing coming in your life. I can see a tea leaf that particularly looks like a big grin. And that suggests to me that there's a happy future for you to come. Right.
So I'm the happy loner on the periphery of life. Yeah. I sound like I should be... arrested.
I'm also
before the next shooting.
I'm also looking at the top of the cluster of tea leaves. Now, I think that is telling me about your job prospects. Now, obviously, you know, you are
sparse, barely there.
Well, what it's telling me is that your prospects for promotion are looking pretty thin. I don't think you're going to be leading Royal Mail into the next generation from this basically tells me that you'll be lucky to stay a postman. It wouldn't be long before you're probably just sticking envelopes down somewhere. That's probably what this is telling me.
You think somewhere there's a big factory with Royal Mail employees who are licking the stamps and putting them on. No, the general public tend to stamp their own mail these days, Trev.
No, I don't think you'll be working for Royal Mail. You'll just be working for, you know, some sort of like the shit that you postmen hand out. The crap junk mail that's sent to us.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'll tell you the one I get a lot is this, you know, community broadband, I think they're called. I get that a lot through my post, you know, so one of those that's got Dear Householder. You haven't even bothered to find my name out, right? Just Dear Householder.
That's not our job. That's who's sending it. Something to do with me.
What I'm telling you, but you've got to listen to me. You're questioning the leaves. I am giving you my interpretation of the leaves, and what I'm telling you is you're going to end up working for somebody like Community Fibre or whatever they're called, licking out the envelopes of the Dear Householder letters.
So, back to what we were originally here for before I was so rudely insulted. Would you like to hear...
The good news is Mrs. Ben isn't cheating on you.
That's something. But would you like to hear Giselle Petrie-Turner's interpretation of the leaves?
Yes, please, yes.
Gaze once more into the swirling remnants of your cup. I see a cluster of tiny specks like little planets orbiting the center. This suggests that your life is being gently pulled towards a moment of profound transformation. Forces unseen are at work, drawing you toward your destiny. And look to the rim where a few specks linger like watchful guardians of the past. They remind you to honor and release what no longer serves you so that you may step boldly into the future. And there at the heart of the cup, an open space like an eye gazing back at you, this eye of insight foretells that clarity is on its way. Be ready for revelations and trust your intuition to light your path. So it is foretold.
Wow.
I mean, that was deep. I mean, well, the bit I'm really clinging on to was release what no longer serves you. I think I can get rid of Mrs. Ben after all.
I mean, what's interesting, it tells you a big transformation is on the way. I suspect that's the move from Royal Mail to Community Fibre, looking down the envelopes. That's probably a very similar thing.
She mentioned the specs at the top of the rim.
Yes, yes. I mean, she didn't have the foresight to really interpret your personality with that.
No, I mean, she, though, to her credit, did give it a bit more performative zhuzh than you gave it. Yours was a bit flat-footed. She gave it some performance.
Well, that's because she's AI. She's been taught by the charlatans who all use that voice. I just gave you it in my own voice. I didn't need to go, "Ooh, the tea leaves," because that's all part of the theatre of the thing.
You're not going to be selling out stadiums. You're not going to be on a Glastonbury doing this, are you?
Well, I might be. They might hear this and think, there's a new... Like, there's a man who knows what he's talking about. He's not faffing about. He's not part of the group of sort of the theatrics of it all. I'm just telling you as it is. I mean, it's all nonsense anyway, isn't it? It's like with the same with horoscopes, right? I used to have quite a belief in, not the horoscopes you read in the paper and all that, but the star you're born under says a lot about your personality. And I used to read up stuff and it would like, and you think, I am sort of the stereotypical Virgo in many ways. You'd sort of read this stuff, maybe there is something in it. And then I think as I've got older, you sort of think, well, you read all the other star signs and they all kind of say the same sort of things. You're a Sagittarius, you've probably got an ambition within you, you want to succeed in life. That's what everyone does. So you can find whatever you want in this stuff and believe it. I do have a friend who really does believe in the sort of star signs and stuff. And also, he'll say things like, that's because I'm a stereotypical Capricorn. Well, what does that mean? You can't just say, well, that's because I'm a stereotypical Capricorn. My behaviour is totally dictated by the star I was born under. It's just nonsense.
You see, that's a weird one, because if you were that person to me, I would have to say, listen, mate, we can still be absolutely, mates, and that's fine. But don't ever ask me what I think of it, because you're not going to like my answer, and my answer is going to offend you and what you believe in. But if you ask me what I think of it, then you're either asking me to lie and dumb myself down. So we just should never talk about this. We can still be friends, but we can just never talk about this.
Well, let's finish by looking at our horoscopes for today. Now, you're an Aries, aren't you?
I am. For years, I was told I was a Pisces by someone who couldn't read the calendar correctly. So I believe for years I was Pisces.
Right.
But apparently I'm Aries.
You're Aries. Right. I'll read you your horoscope for today, Sunday, the 29th of June, 2025. This is from Russell Grant, the king of the astrologers, of course.
Okay.
Events bring attention to matters involving children, encouraging you to focus more on what the young people in your life are getting up to. Now, how many children? I mean, obviously you don't have children, but are there children in your life in any way, shape or form?
I have a niece and nephew who are lovely.
Right. What are they getting up to?
They're very little. They're getting up to little people stuff. I don't know.
Well, focus more on it. Listen to Russell Wright. You've got to focus more on it. Taking part in group and family activities will reconnect you with your inner child. Now, interestingly, we're recording early today because you are off to be with your family later today. So will that reconnect you with your inner child this afternoon?
No, it'll reconnect me with my inner skiv, because you might remember that a few weeks ago my old man took a dive off the grass onto the patio and hospitalised himself. So now Muggins here has got to cut the grass. So it's not reconnecting me with anything but my inner gardener.
Well, no, but didn't you used to do that when you were younger with your dad? You used to work with your dad when you were younger.
I did, but so that was for financial repayment. It wasn't.
It's reconnecting you with your inner child in a way, isn't it? But this is the final sentence. When sending messages and arranging meetings, be certain you have the correct addresses, numbers, dates and times. I mean, I would say that's advice for every day, not just Sunday, the 29th of June, 2025. I mean, you are going to your dad's house. You do know that house well, but I just want to check, do you know the correct address?
I do. I do hate to admit this, though, but next weekend I'm off to a family do, and I do need to check the address.
Well, there's more to this than VCI, isn't there?
Which is annoying me, because I wanted to just trash it, but that is annoyingly accurate.
Right, shall we do mine?
Absolutely.
I'm a Virgo, right? It's hard to believe other people are having such a good day when you seem to be facing numerous challenges. Well, I mean, that's my life every day, every day.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's copy and paste every day for you.
You just want to retreat to the comfort of your home and hide away. Oh, my God, this is so correct. I'm suddenly believing this bullshit.
This is actually, like, custom written for you.
I mean, I do that every day, hide away and retreat. I don't want to be anywhere near other people. Even so, your hard work will not be wasted, and there are people ready to support you when you need it most.
I'm not sure about the last bit.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations. Got anything for us this week, Ben?
Regretfully, I've got something for Cautionary Corner.
Oh, okay.
It's been finished for a while, but it's recently been added onto Netflix, which is how I found it again. It's the show called Back with Robert Webb and David Mitchell.
Yes.
I enjoyed the first few episodes of Series 1. It was genuinely intriguing. Sort of thought, where is this going? The Mitchell and Webb characters, they're very interesting characters themselves. And then Series 2 came along, and then it finished, and apparently that's the end of it. And unfortunately, where is this going? The answer was fucking nowhere. It was just lurching around from storyline to storyline, never really going anywhere. The side characters were all extremely goofy. I felt it listless and pointless, to be honest, and by the end of it, I was just glad it was finished.
Yeah, I watched them again recently. I think I watched them first time round, or certainly the first series, and I've watched them when they came on Netflix. And I was the same opinion of you. I thought, in isolation, there were some good moments, but I was very disappointed by how it ended. And to find that that was it, I almost felt like that's not how they intended it to end.
I agree.
That there were more, perhaps was going to be another series. I don't know, but it just felt like there's more questions than answers now. And that annoys me. So, yeah.
And I'm a huge Mitchell and Webb fan, so to put anything of theirs in Cautionary Corner hurts me, but I've got to be honest, it was disappointing.
Yeah, I think overall disappointing. I would agree with you there. I'm not sure I'd quite put it in Cautionary Corner. I've got something that's pending for Cautionary Corner.
Oh, there's a queue for Cautionary Corner.
Well, I haven't quite decided. I've started watching a thing on Channel 5, you know, like my detective shows.
Yes.
And there's one, it's called Murder Most Puzzling. And it's basically this woman who is supposedly called the Puzzler because she's a crossword setter, although she's not actually the crossword setter, it's her niece. But then she sort of becomes, it's almost like that Miss Marple type thing. And I've watched the first two, and I don't know if I can continue with it, but it's pending. I'll let you know next week when I've watched the third one. They're very long. I won't tell you any more now, but that's pending. Just a warning for next week.
Well, if you're in that sort of mood, it does remind me of a very good episode of Inside Number 9, where Steve Pemberton's character plays a cryptic crossword setter. Yeah, that is a fantastic episode.
Yes, no, that's very good.
I can't remember what it's called. It's something like the Something of the Sphinx or something like that.
Yes, it's something like that, yeah. But no, that's a very, very good episode. I've got two things to recommend this week. A documentary I watched on Sky Documentaries. Now, were you ever aware of the character Pee-wee Herman?
I have heard of Pee-wee Herman. I know what he's supposed to be known for, and I know what I know him for.
Right, okay. Well, there's a documentary called Pee-wee as Himself. It was a documentary made by Paul Rubens, who was the actor who was Pee-wee Herman. I think he passed away before the documentary was finished. I mean, just an interesting, complicated character, really. Anyway, that was on Sky Documentaries. And the other thing I'm going to recommend is, have you ever heard of the comedian Jeff Innocent?
I haven't.
Well, I only discovered him, I think, last year when he was on the Richard Herring podcast. And I really enjoyed that episode. And then I found a few clips of him on YouTube. He's been around doing comedy, I think, for 27 years, but it's only in the last couple of years he's sort of started to go a bit viral. So he sort of jokes, you know, I'm an overnight success after 27 years.
Okay.
And he's got a full special, which is only 52 minutes on YouTube, called Smart Casual. And he's just a very funny comedian, a bit different to a lot of other comedians, you know. And I think because he's older, and now that I'm older, I suppose, because I do find now I don't connect with the younger comedians, you know, now that I'm getting older. I mean, he's older than I am, but I feel like, oh, I can resonate with some of the stuff you're talking about.
I've just Googled him, and I actually have seen some of his stuff. I didn't know that was his name, but I have seen some of his bits.
I'll put a link to the special, if I remember, in the description for this podcast, so you can just click on it. But it's well worth a watch. He's very funny.
Lovely.
So there we are. That's it for this week. Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Ben on X and on Blue Sky. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.